Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh. Thank you for joining us on this fun little humor-adjacent medical podcast. You know what I'm thinking about doing? I'm thinking about changing my introductions a bit. I don't know if you guys out there ever use the app Headspace. It's this meditation app. And the guy who does it, this British guy, is really calming. I think I'm just going to copy him. I'm going to start introducing myself like this. Hi, I'm Andy. From Headspace. Pretty good, isn't it?
That's not bad at all.
Hi, I'm Kaveh from the House of Pod. Joining me today on this episode about college, baby, we got two special guests. One, Dr. Tyler Black, returning champ, psychiatrist, suicidologist, all-around mensch. Tyler, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, sir.
It's always good to see you, buddy. It's always good to see you. I'm glad your Lakers lost. Yes, I'm glad. Sorry to say that
your Warriors lost.
Okay, fair, well. Fair. Joining us also to talk about college, because you and I, it's been a while since we've been in college. Joining us to talk about college is someone who's actively experiencing college. The listeners haven't heard from him in about a year. Intern Allie, wow, buddy, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It's been a while. It's been a long time. I don't even know if I was in college when I was here last.
No, you were not. Now you're in it. You're in it, baby. Tell us, before we get to sort of the news of the day, just real quick, tell us what year in college you are.
I just finished my sophomore year, so I'm going to my third year of college. And, you know, I've experienced it. You know, now I've done the dorms, now I've done the apartment, so now I'm kind of really getting into the real special upper division classes.
Yeah, the meat of it.
We have my summer. I just finished. So,
all right. Okay. Before we get to that, because I do want to talk about college. I do want to talk about how it's changed, what it's like. You know, what the last couple of years have been like, especially during COVID, and talk about the stresses of college. But before we do that, I think we have to discuss the news of the day. So, there's always interesting things happening on Twitter, and Twitter's been a pretty awful place for a long time now. It was awful, if we're being honest, before Elon took over, but it's gotten worse, and today was a day so bad that I think a lot of us in medicine just felt icky about even being there. And I'll explain what happened, because Allie, you're not on Twitter. Like, you're like the youth is not on Twitter anymore, right?
A little bit. I peruse. I browse.
You're mostly on what? Instagram?
Yeah. TikTok? No, not too much. I was, but now it's no longer around. So,
no, yeah. Too bad.
If you were back on Vine.
I'd be all over that.
I was there too.
All right, so let me tell you a little bit about what happened. So, okay, first, I think we have to talk about one of the central characters of this, a guy named Peter Hotez. He's an American physician. Have you heard of him, Allie?
No, I have not.
So he's kind of a well-known guy. You've probably seen him talking on like CNN or MSNBC, and maybe rarely seeing like someone on like Fox like yelling at him. He's an American pediatrician. He's pretty much recognized as a, not pretty much, he's recognized as an expert in global health vaccines. He's a professor at Baylor. He's worked on vaccines for years, like hookworm, schistosomiasis, Chagas disease. These are all things you're going to have to learn about, my friend, because you're pre-med. We'll get to that soon. But also, he's been working on a patent-free COVID vaccine, by the way, and he worked on that. And that's been delivered to millions of people worldwide. And he seems like an all-around decent dude, but he's gotten like this tremendous amount of online hate, a lot of it anti-Semitic, a lot of it just he's become a focus, a lightning rod for a lot of these people who are against the vaccine. And he recently has been vocal about, you know, this recent interview that Joe Rogan did with RFK Jr. We have a recent episode about that. I will refer our listeners to learn more about RFK Jr. Basically, he tweeted out a Vice article that was critical of that interview and how, you know, Rogan was allowing for RFK Jr. to come on and further promote the false links between autism and vaccines and thiomersal. Or you can go back to the RFK Jr. Episode to hear the debate about the pronunciation. But he was critical about it. And then Rogan basically in like true bro fashion, billionaire bro fashion, called him out and was like, dude, come on the show and debate with him or you're a pussy. Come on the show and debate, and I'll give you $100,000 to the charity of your choosing, or you're a pussy. And then like some other billionaires like Bill Ackman and Steve Kirsch and other billionaires, which really apply. This is no better example of why we need a wealth tax than this very example. But anyways, these guys all sort of like jumped in on him. Elon, of course, gets in on the action too. And he's like, oh, maybe he doesn't like charity. He's wrong about this stuff. And this all leads to basically this pretty nice seeming pediatrician being stalked outside of his home on Father's Day and being harassed and taunted by Rogan bros who are like, why won't you debate him? And I have some thoughts about this. But first, let me just ask you, Tyler, do you think Peter Hotez, esteemed physician, should go on the podcast of the guy who was famous for making people eat like sheep's testicles and spiders to debate? Is this a leading question? Like, is, should he go? Should he go on the? Tell me the truth, honestly. What do you think? Should he go and do this debate with RFK Jr.?
Well, categorically no. But I want to start by saying Peter Hotez is not doing this on a whim. He's written a book that I recommend everybody buy. It's called Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel Autism's My Journey as a Vaccine Scientist, Pediatrician, and Autism Dad. In that book, he takes on RFK. He takes on all of the sort of links between autism and vaccines that have been purported by these shyster, shill, absolutely fraudulent, retracted, and disgraced scientists. And there's no other way to describe all of the scientists who've tried to make a link between autism and childhood vaccines. Absolutely scum, retracted, awful, completely reprehensible scientists. And of course, when you're a parent who has a child with autism and you buy into this for a second, guess what happens to you as a parent? You feel like you literally harmed your child, that your choices set your child on a lifetime of barriers and systemic discrimination. And we don't look at autism as a disease. And definitely patients with autism will tell us all the time that they don't want to be seen the same way that we look at other disabilities, because there are ways to live a good life with autism. But we know that autism is a spectrum. And as it gets to the more functionally impaired versions of autism, it can be really hard. Of course, there's lots of brilliant autistic people out there doing all sorts of things. So this is not Peter Hotez just talking about RFK casually, or, just taking on misinformation abstractly. This has been misinformation that harmed him as a dad when his child was diagnosed with autism. And And you watch this RFK Joe Rogan interview, which doesn't just talk about the link between vaccines and autism or the COVID response with vaccines. It talks about Wi-Fi and cancer and 5G and cancer and all sorts of CIA conspiracy theories about JFK Jr. and all these, like, it is just like, it's he's a conspiratorial nut. And here's what happens if you go on a debate. And Kaveh, we haven't practiced this, but I'll let you be Peter.
Oh, okay. Ortiz, cool.
And I'll be RFK. And I want you to say some statement like, I don't know, the science shows us that there's no link between, we haven't been able to find a link or something like that.
The science has been very clear on that matter. I don't know actually how he sounds. I've read some of this stuff, but I don't know how he sounds. So I assume I have heard him. He talks sort of like this. The science is very clear on the matter. We don't have any link that's ever been proven between autism and the vaccines that we've given, which have saved countless lives.
Right, but you're not talking about the link between mercury and autism, and not to mention the fact that there was a whistleblower report in 2018 that showed that the CDC hid a study linking thimerosal to autism. As well, we have 650 patients sworn testimony telling us that autism is linked to their childhood vaccine. In fact, they didn't have any symptoms of autism before. This is a conspiracy. It starts with pharma and it goes all the way to the bottom. And I wonder, Dr. Hotez, if you have anything to declare with respect to your financial interests.
Right, we've been
exactly.
Very
that's, what been, I,
wait, okay, that's what I
thought.
Okay. Well,
this is what I mean. So there's two things that happens when you try to bring science into a debate like this, especially with these people. Number one, you're going to get gishgalopped. Gishgalop is a phrase used in science misinformation where someone presents to you four or five things to refute at once. And of course, your burden goes up just immensely trying to refute just one of them.
Right.
But that ties into the other, my favorite principle, which is Brandolini's law, or the bullshit asymmetry principle, which means if you say something like 600 parents said that their autism started right after the vaccine,
right,
the amount of work it takes to overcome that is hard because you have to explain the nature of anecdotal evidence, right, and how does science tease these things out and what do we do with a signal like that. But then he can just move right on to the next thing and throw another bit of easy bullshit at you. It is the worst idea in the world. If it was a neutral space that let you get all the evidence beforehand and read someone else's thing
and be fact checked
and be fact checked,
yeah.
But the way they fact check, no, they just Google shit. They Google it. Jamie, could you Google this? I'm surprised they're not typing into ChatGPT at this point. I mean, they're not fact checking at all. It's the absolute wrong thing to do debate someone like this.
Ali, it's not how medicine and practice in medicine is altered or changed. We don't debate in that sort of way. You know, there are people who have different opinions. There are opinions that change over time. Practices can change over time, but that's through peer-reviewed studies. That's through people like producing literature that can be fact-checked. That's how it works. It's not through this presidential candidate who is a lawyer, by the way, and is used to rhetorical arguments, arguing with a man who's dedicated his life to helping kids through the practice of medicine. I one thing I feel very confident about is if you were to take like the most famous, who would you say, Tyler, is the most famous creator of vaccines of all time?
I mean, like in terms of scientists, probably like Salk would be the one that you think of the most.
Bet you he was a shit rhetorical arguer. I bet you the guy, if you put him into a room with a lawyer, he would get creamed. And then people would be like, oh, I guess vaccines suck. Vaccines suck dick. Because Salk, this guy couldn't, that's not what he was there for, you know? That's not what he did. It's like, that's not how we make the decisions. It's a nice ability to have to win an argument, but that's not how we practice medicine. You practice medicine by proving the science and not proving it in argument where you can do this gish gallop or all these other sort of rhetorical tools to win an argument. And that's Rogan loves that shit, obviously, because
and antithetical to Rogan and Musk and all those people, like Salk, when he did the polio vaccine, he specifically chose not to patent it. That was like a decision he made. He created a life-saving, world-changing vaccine. And basically, I think his quote was something like, could you patent the sun? When someone asked him if he was going to try and patent this, it was that important to the world. Of course, he probably lost billions of dollars in not patenting it. But what a absolute challenge to something like Elon Musk or Joe Rogan or any one of these, you know, people what's his face? This guy, Steve Kirsch, who's really just a really weird nobody, but very rich. They would all talk about, you know, money talks and money is the leader. These are all crypto bros. These are all people who believe that money is the way that you solve these problems. Let's look at the betting markets and decide whether or not autism is caused by vaccines. I mean, these are just the opposite of the type of public scientist that Salk and Hotez are. He's a great scientist. He takes on misinformation regularly. He founded a journal for neglected tropical diseases. I mean, this is a man who's dedicated to helping the world out of its infectious disease problem. And to have him be attacked like this is just, I'm so angry. This made me want to quit Twitter more than anything that's happened on Twitter this last weekend. It's been so disheartening.
Today was a real bummer for Twitter, for us. Yeah. And if you're interested, you could go to either my feed or I'm sure Tyler's feed, and you could see the comments left behind by these Elon Musk stans. So, Ali, this is the world that you are choosing to become a doctor in. Are you fucking crazy?
I think there's just a certain amount of people that you can't even do anything. These kinds of people, like you're talking about with all these debates, these people go into these podcasts with this narrative they built up in their head, and the narrative that they can just kind of counter everything that you say because they have some random, you know, like mental gymnastics thing, like multi-step, oh, what about this thing, or you're just lying, like they're suppressing the data. And then when you get to that point, what can you do with these people? And you know, the people, they'll always be people who, you know, will harass you and be horrible. And I think it's been worse in the recent years, especially because now we have Twitter, which is a source that millions of people use, and it's used, owned by this insane person who is just using it as a platform for more insane people. And it's going to get worse, but you know, you're always going to need doctors and people in medicine. And you know,
has it affected your interest in it, though? Because, I mean, you first decided to become a doctor a long time ago when you were very young, and you still are very young, and you started the process before this COVID and this really strange backlash that we've experienced against public health and physicians, like, which, again, I want to make it clear, this is not the majority of the country. It's a sizable population. And a very vocal one, but has that decreased your drive at all, do you think?
I think that this might be like a little naive to say this, but I feel like all this stuff that these people has kind of almost made me want to do it more. Like, would it matter to these people who are so adamant on saying that like vaccines are going to chip you and they're going to cause autism, they're going to destroy the country? Would it matter if I knew what I was talking about or not? Probably not, because they don't. But it, in a way, it makes me kind of just want to know what I'm talking about, so I can more, you know, effectively combat these people and this misinformation. And maybe that's naive. Maybe I haven't dealt with these people enough. And maybe in like 10 years, if I keep going down this path and I deal with so many people, I'm just going to be so done with it. No, but
Ali, that's the way. I'll tell you right now. It is really easy to say, you know, we can't do anything, this is too loud, but we need people who care about good science and caring for others and being, you know, altruistic in our motivations and wanting to do the best for the people that we work with. And we definitely need people, you know, we need people in this fight.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting to me is how different the Ali's generation is going to be in regards to how they approach this problem. Like, I mean, for us, it was really surprising, I think, for most of us, like this backlash. And it shouldn't, you could argue very well that it shouldn't have been, but, you know, I felt like it was. Now they're coming into this world, starting up seeing what's happened to infectious disease doctors, the public health doctors, to seeing the backlash against some of these things. So I wonder how that's going to affect them. I wonder how that generation's going to be. Do you feel like, and both of you guys can give me an answer to this, do you feel like the generations coming up now in medicine are going to have a different identity, or they're going to be less surprised?
I think so. I think these people, anybody who wants to be a doctor now, first of all, made it through the first wave of all these people going crazy about this like backlash against public health and all this. So if they want to still go into medicine, assuming they're not somebody who's like, I'm going to be a whistleblower, I'm going to destroy the industry or whatever. They've already made it past that. So obviously they're genuine enough in wanting to be a doctor. And I think that just everyone now is going to be so exposed to all these different opinions that maybe, you know, like 20 years ago, you would hear from like some random guy, but you wouldn't hear this like chorus of these crazy people on Twitter or on social media, like amplifying each other. So I think now everyone kind of knows what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good thing, because if you know what you're getting into and you still want to go into it, then you really are dedicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Tyler, what advice do you have for the young generation, the youth in medicine? What advice do you have for pre-meds, for nurses, people interested in public health coming up in the world now?
And you know this as well. It is so easy to enter medicine. I think most people enter medicine with high ideals, and you can see people that you can model your career off of, whether they're professors or supervisors or doctors that you work with in the community.
Or podcasters.
Podcasters.
Yeah.
And every class, every group, you know, there's that, those few people that just give their all. They're lovely, amazing people who are the kindest to their patients and the most helpful teachers. And they're just, you want to find those people where you're working and spend time with them, and not just think about the stuff that they're teaching you, but how could they be doing that after 20 or 30 years in practice? How could they still be that? You know, I can imagine being a resident under Peter Hotez. You know, he's got the bow tie and he's always so passionate, and he's always like, he always talks so so passionately about science and those types of things. But you know, there's a reason, because it's regenerative. The pathway of take care of yourself, get the money you can, don't teach, you know, it's just a waste of your time because you don't make money or whatever it is. That pathway is a pathway of burnout. It's a pathway of feeling like you're just a cog in a wheel. Like, it really does make a difference to put your all into it. And if you can find those preceptors, those profs that you can tell they put their all into it, don't just learn from them and the content, but learn how they got there. Why are they like that? Why are they able to do that year after year after year, a new crop of residents? And each time those residents feel like they're special to those teachers and those supervisors. And so I just say, just make sure you realize that the same filter that you apply to friends you meet in class, the same filter that you apply to people you'd meet at work, apply that to your preceptors and teachers. Remember that teachers can teach you the wrong stuff too. And that's the most important thing to me.
That's great advice. All right, let's segue into more general discussion at this point about youth culture and what it's like being in college in 2023. So Allie, we're not going to say where you're going to college. We'll say it's in California. It's a university here in California. And you've been here for, as you mentioned, you're coming into your third year. So you've had a real experience so far. But how would you compare? I know it's hard because it's the only one you've had, but how do you feel COVID has affected your college experience? Good, and I'm assuming mostly bad.
Well, I did get lucky, and I did go into college at, you know, not at the very peak when everything was online. So I got a little bit of that experience, but there's definitely those remnants there throughout my freshman year and even going into my sophomore year. Every week we'd have these, every 2 weeks we'd do surveys and testing, and it would be a lot of stuff. And there would always make people carry around like a pass or, you know, approved little thing so you could get into all these campus facilities. So, you know, in the context of it took more of my time, you know, there was that. There's a lot more focus on that. But I think when coming into college from going in, you know, the last 2 years of my high school, basically online. And when going into college, I think that did kind of create people who were a little bit like stuck in high school, but also at the same time, I'm not going to name names, obviously, but but also have people who are really who are kind of still having to get used to going back to in person again. It was kind of a big jump to go from being able to just kind of stay in my bed and take classes from my bed to going to classes every day or every other day, to the point where even now I still like wake up for my class at like 11 and wonder how I went to class at 8 for every day for 4 years of high school.
That's an interesting point, that there's sort of a stunted growth potentially for some of these kids who had a weird high school that experience. Do you feel like those people have caught up at this point, or are catching up after a year or two of college?
I think so. I think of course, you know, you get to some people, there's just some people, but I think there are people who have.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Definitely had to like outgrow their high school drama and sort of stuff like that. I mean, again, for me and a lot of people in my class, our high school experience kind of ended at sophomore year of high school. Going into junior year, we had maybe the whole year of online. Senior year, we had maybe half a semester of in-person. So a lot of people were kind of just thrown into that, and kind of had a lot of their developmental stuff cut off, I feel. You know, I definitely feel like I kind of experienced that as well. It was hard to go just to being totally online for like 2 years. And of course, I'm not saying we shouldn't have. I would like to make that clear. I am totally on board with, you know, COVID safety. But of course, to say that it didn't impact people would be a lie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tyler, you talk about that a lot. I mean, you talk about no one is sugarcoating the impacts of what the original quarantines look like and what that shift is. No one's sugarcoating that. How do you respond to people online who will say, or in real life for that matter, who will say, this is what you doctors did. You guys you ruined this kid's life.
The thing that people get a little bit, you know, when they're making this argument, they forget that the counterfactual to the interventions we did to prevent COVID is not we didn't do those interventions and there was no suffering. It's very likely we didn't do those interventions and there was more suffering, because we know for sure all of the interventions, whether it's stay at home, wash your hands, which, you know, for a respiratory virus maybe wasn't as important as we first thought it was, but it's still not nothing. Wear a mask, don't go out if you're sick, don't have schools. If we can do online school during a period of high transmission, don't do that. Take vaccines. These are all things that reduced transmission of the virus. And some of them, like vaccines, are directly linked to dying less. So if we didn't do those things, we're not in a world where everything was the way it was before. We're likely in a world where at some point Alley School would have been shut down due to an outbreak.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be planned. It would be, now there's no classes for 2 weeks and we'll see what happens, or a whole bunch of teachers get sick or one of the profs dies or, whatever it is, like this idea that undoing the things we did to protect people from COVID would not change the calculations in death and transmission is just ridiculous. Yeah. Of course, anti-vaxxers love to hang on to, the vaccines didn't stop transmission that much. They didn't do it as much as we hoped, but it was still bigger than zero. Like it was vaccine effectiveness was in the 40s for preventing transmission. Masks, vaccine transmission effectiveness, probably in the 20s to 40s, depending on the quality of mask. Staying at home during periods of high transmission, probably 50 to 70% vaccine transmission of efficacy in terms of preventing. So these are all things that added to reduce death and burden. And so, I would say to people who think like that, likely the scenario is if we didn't do things, it would have been much worse. And and that, that's just the reality of a pandemic. Pandemics suck. It's a really shitty thing.
Yes.
Allie, how do you respond to that? Allie, what's your response? Let's fight. Let's debate.
I agree. I think debate entirely. Sucks. Yeah. Sorry, I don't have any random studies from 20 years ago that are just proven to throw you. But I agree. Yeah, I agree very much so with all that. I think it made as somebody who was very aware of all this going on during the pandemic, I think it was so maddening to me to see people talk about, and I don't think I'm getting too specific, like what are the odds somebody from my high school listened to this, but there's a period where everybody on campus was like, we're gonna come to school without our masks and protest, and me and many others got so mad, and it was just such this period of even though it sucks, it's only 2 years of our lives. I mean, come on. I think it was ridiculous that people got so out of obviously it impacted people. I think a lot of people didn't get a lot of high school experiences that you see, like I didn't get a prom, a lot of people didn't get a prom, stuff like that, which whatever, right? People didn't die, so it's okay. I agree with all of that, where even though there were some negative consequences and maybe stuff didn't work as well as people hoped, it's always worth it if it could, then better than doing nothing.
You're a good kid, Allie. You're low maintenance, you're low drama. And I mean, you shouldn't also, and these things are true. They're both true that it was important. And a lot of the decisions were made were the right ones to make, and that it sucked for you guys in particular, for particular groups that sucked more than others. So
even in my area, I focus a lot on suicide and the changes of suicide during the pandemic, the 18 to 24 group is the one group that we saw the strongest increase in suicides in. And I do think it was very tough on young adults, sort of navigating entering adulthood during the pandemic.
Yeah, so what are, Allie, what do you think are the, I know this is a hard question to answer and probably impossible, but you talked to some of your friends before this episode and you've talked to your friends, I'm sure, about things like this beforehand. What are the major stresses facing you and your friends in college right now?
I think there's a lot of things. I think and I'm sure this is not unique to my generation, but I think something that it's always just being a lot very aware of, especially I have some friends who are pre-med, who want to be pre-med, people who are going to these STEM fields, is a lot of stress when you're in these classes, when you get to hear these people talk about how well they do in the test, and then you check your grade and you're kind of praying the curve is good. And I think another thing that I hear a lot about, and again, I'm sure this is not unique to us, is burnout, and it's kind of just a feeling of general giving up as the quarters progress, some of those on a core system, I'm sure it's the same thing with semesters, where there's just kind of this big drop in energy as you keep going. And I can tell you from personal experience that those last few weeks definitely become rough, and I'm sure they'll only get rougher, but that's just a part of the experience.
It's an interesting thing. I don't think the term burnout was in my vocabulary even at college. I don't think I used that to describe the feelings. I mean, I wonder, the rest of it sounds pretty on brand with, at least my pre-med experience, which was, it's extraordinarily stressful and competitive and with challenging time. I was at UC Berkeley, and that was a very, very competitive school for the pre-meds. So I feel that for sure. I don't know about the burnout. I do feel like that might be a little different now. I feel like there might be more going on in the world in order to cause that emotional burnout. Are there, and when I also, I'll say this, there was certainly not a lot of openness about seeking mental help, get healthcare to be medicated if you needed it for things, to get counseling, to meditate, that sort of stuff. That was sort of in the realm of like, you know, like what people would consider either strange, weird, hippies left, or damaged people. And now, do you think it's better? Do you think people are more open about that, about like the stresses they're in, the burnout that they're feeling, or depression or other things?
Yeah, I absolutely think that is something I see a lot of people talk about. I mean, I know plenty of people who aren't medicated. I know people openly talk about being medicated and going to therapy. I think it's a difficult topic, of course. It's hard for people to open up about that, and it's hard for places to adequately provide mental health resources for students. I know, ask any person at UC, and I'm sure they can tell you that people are concerned about mental health. They don't think they're getting enough resources. But I do think it's being talked about more. I think it's being discussed more. I think people are taking mental health, you know, breaks, and there's counseling stuff that campuses are offering. So that's always, it's always a good thing. I don't know how many people are taking advantage of it personally, but just the fact that it's available, I think, is something that I, you know, is good.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I was in med school, it was kind of like, you know, if your story was, I had cancer as a kid, or my mom has cancer, I'm currently going through cancer, and this is why I want to become an oncologist, or this is why I want to become a doctor to help others. It was like this great story that everyone would put on the letters. But if it was, you know, my family struggled with mental illness, or I've struggled with mental illness, or I'm still struggling with mental illness, it was like a total no-go. Don't mention it. It took, you know, I was relatively, I didn't always want to be a psychiatrist. In fact, I joined wanting to be an ophthalmologist. But when I was in first year, one of my very first clerkship experiences was doing internal medicine, and I got my butt kicked. I was working a lot. I forgot to study. My first exam, I had a full on panic attack. We're talking like could not read the page, couldn't understand English, panic attack. I knew I was going to fail this test, and this test was required to pass the state, the rotation. And it took me so long to admit that I was stressed and then I think about where my career is now, where my advice to me at that time would be, dude, reach out, get help. It's okay. Don't worry. It's just a panic attack. It's not a reflection of your knowledge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, I do think the newer generation of students, really has a good handle on the importance of tending to your mental health garden, as well as addressing mental health issues when they come up.
Mental health garden, I like that. I also think it's kind of, there's something there about you, like being like an ophthalmologist, and there's something about like windows to the soul or whatever. That's interesting.
Eyeballs got, yeah, I didn't mind the eyeball. I did not like being a surgeon, man. Let me tell you, I could not get into the surgical lifestyle.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Ali, I know it's early, and I'll check, we'll check in with you like annually to see where you're at, but is there a particular thing in medicine you want to do?
It's crazy, because I was about to say, I kind of want to do some surgical adjacent thing.
Yeah.
In medicine, I need to
over my dead body, young man. You will not bring shame to this family. He's my
nephew.
You're
going to focus entirely on colons and
No, I'm just kidding. Obviously,
the family business.
Wait. So, you maybe a subspecialty? So, like, any interest in ophthalmology or ENT? What is there? Is there anything in particular that you're interested in?
See, this is a question I need to prepare for.
It's gonna. Don't worry. You're incredibly early on in this process, and it's almost weird when someone knows for sure what they want to do this early.
To be wearing scrubs and do the Peter Benton fist bump after a surgery, the fist pump that he did in the opening scene of ER. That was my entire motivation for becoming a doctor.
Do you do that if you convince someone not to commit suicide? You punch dance your way down the hole.
Eric LaSalle in ER was just the coolest doctor, and that's why I wanted to be a surgeon, because of Peter Benton from ER, played by Eric LaSalle.
Man, my God, no, had no impact on me. It missed me. Well, that's good, buddy. I'm glad, Allie. I'm glad that you already start to think about these things. It's good. Stay open-minded about it. All right, last question, Allie. What about the parties? Like, what's going on? Are people still partying? I mean, I know, again, it's hard for you to compare. You've been there the last 2 years, and things have been strange during COVID, but I'm sure you've talked to upperclassmen and women about, like, what's changed over the years. Are there still parties happening? Are they the same kind of big keg parties that, like, you know, Tyler and I experienced? Or are they smaller? Are they all outdoors? Like, how does it work now?
I know there are very much still parties. There are very much still. There were parties during COVID. People were raving. I think that's just kind of a constant. As long as there will be frat houses and sororities, there will be parties.
That's why they exist. This is why they exist. Yeah.
And I don't know how. Now, personally, again, I wasn't there during the height of COVID. Who knows? I don't know if all these places shut down. I don't know if they had social distance outside parties. Something about me tells me they didn't. But I can guarantee you they have gone back. They are back to normal.
All right, that's good. What about drug use? I mean, is it marijuana? Is it harder stuff? Is it pretty common, or is it pretty rare?
This is actually something that has kind of shocked me in recently. I guess when I was in high school and I was in stuff, people would drink, people would smoke, but you know, weed, marijuana, but that would be it. Now, even not even like in college, people under in high school, seniors, classes below me are doing like cocaine, and fentanyl's a big one. I know that's a big one people have been hearing a lot about recently, being laced with stuff. I don't know if I was just never in the room, or never in the crowds that did it, but I kind of am a little bit shocked by how recent, like how much I've heard about that in recent years. I think that's definitely something. Maybe now, could this be because of COVID? Could it be because people were so bored or so doing nothing that they just kind of started to turn to more and more extreme stuff? It's possible. But that is something that has actually surprised me. The years below me in high school classes actually got in huge troubles because they brought like cocaine to like school events. So there's a lot of stuff like that, which definitely I've found. And again, maybe I just haven't known people. Maybe I'm going to sound like someone who's like lived under a rock for years from saying this, but in my experience, it's definitely been kind of shocking. I've found.
Yeah. No, I don't suspect that's too far off from what our experiences were, or from what I think most people's are. What do you think is there higher rates of drug use now, you think, than before?
Typically we've seen drug use rates come down, but you know, I have in recent years, and I think it's very regional. Drug use is very regional, the epicenter of meth use used to be like the northwestern United States, and then it kind of spreads and then it gets less popular. So things move around. In my neck of the woods in BC, I've been seeing a lot more stimulant abuse than I'm used to seeing. So whether it's cocaine or crushed prescription medications or those types of things, I've seen a little bit more of that in younger people. And surprisingly, despite, you know, the legalization or the decriminalization or all the different pathways to open up marijuana, we haven't really seen a huge increase in the amount of kids using marijuana. It's stayed pretty level. I think vaping is probably the one that I think is probably on the uptick. It's hard to tell because our surveys on it aren't great, but certainly it's more than replaced the decline of smoking. Smoking has been coming down. Smoking cigarettes and things like that has been coming down every year for decades now. Kids have smoked less and less, but vaping, I think, has more than replaced the amount that's been coming down in the most recent years. So there's that. Overall, I always find that the new generation is more likely to make better choices, less impulsive choices, and they go into it with more information. So, you know, I think overall it's still a better picture.
Well, Ali, I think you're a terrific example of that. Make good choices, my friend.
I have a question for Ali because I'm so curious what it's like being at college and being inundated with all this woke liberal bullshit.
Of course. Yeah.
As a serious question, like the perception of college is, especially in right-wing blogosphere and in on Fox News and those types of things, is just this bastion of you're not free to say anything. There's so much wokeism. You're so stifled. Nobody can speak their piece. It's all militant, you know, whatever. What's your day-to-day experience compared to that?
I've heard all this too. These people. I find that in general, it's fine. I mean, obviously, I am somebody who I like to think is. I hate the word woke. Woke to me is like a buzzword used by people online to just kind of generally describe like any new idea. But I would personally say I like to think I'm pretty liberal. And to me, I have never really run into anything. I've never really met anybody who, you go online, you see these people and they're like, I called somebody the wrong gender and they killed me. They beat me up. Some crazy thing like that, you know, like they screamed at me for hours. I've never experienced that. I, on any chance where that's happened, generally people will be like, hey, this is it. And you're like, okay, sorry. And you'll move on. The people even if people are doing more and they're, you know, there's more people who are able to, you know, be out, be transgender, be gay, be lesbian, be the whole LGBTQ+. Even though there's, I would imagine there is more of that as people become more comfortable. There is no, in my experience, I've never seen anybody like, oh, we've taken away their free speech. We've canceled him. We've destroyed this person, whatever. That in my day-to-day life, it has been, you know, relatively the same, I feel. And if there are people who are really getting, you know, attacked, it's usually for good reason, I feel.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like, I forget, there was this tweet that came out a while back and someone was like, man, I'm being canceled for my conservative opinions on things. So they're like, oh, you mean about fiscal management? No, not those opinions. Oh, you mean about states' rights? No, not those opinions. Well, what opinions are you being canceled for? You know the ones.
You know the ones.
You know the ones.
it's the ones that I don't want to repeat.
All right, Ali, I'm really proud of you, buddy. You have nothing to plug. I'm not going to let you be on social media. So nothing to plug for you except for we'll have you back and you'll tell us in a year or so if you're still interested in the surgical subspecialty. I'll have a year to work you into the world of GI and expose you to its wonders.
There was a lecture that I attended in medical school called The Joys and Wonders of the Anal Canal.
Oh wow.
I still think about that.
Progressive, actually. So Tyler, tell us where people can find you, and let's plug some stuff for you, my friend.
Sure. So Tyler Black 32 on Twitter. Like this crisis of consciousness weekend, I still hanging on by a thread, though I'm really disheartened to see the direction that Elon's taken stuff. So look for me in other places. If you Google me, you'll typically find stuff. But I will say I have started a blog for information on suicide and suicidology, which is my primary passion. It's kind of what I want to get back to. I never really entered social media space to get into fights with anti-vaxxers online, though I don't mind debunking things. I like to stick to what I know best. And so I have created a blog for suicidology that I've been posting to, you know, with some frequency. And it's at suicidology.substack.com. It's free. I'm not substacking it to make money. I'm just doing it because it's a publishing platform. And I try to put in good data there. I think there's, you know, if you're someone who's clinically interested in suicide, if you're someone who just wants to learn more about it. I always think that suicide is a very interesting topic, but I try to do it really good service. So I'd encourage people to subscribe there.
I recommend it as well. I highly recommend it. You guys both, I love you both. I'm so happy to have you on. For people who aren't already, don't follow me on Twitter. Come to Blue Sky, which finally I'm now a part of. So follow me at KaveMD at Blue Sky or whatever.
I'm Tyler Black at Blue Sky, I think. I think I do have one too.
Yeah, we follow. Yeah, you're not on. You're not using it yet. We'll get you going on that.
There's been so many starts that I'm not sure if this is the one. And then
it feels more the one than Mastodon and Post, but I can't guarantee it's the one either. If you like the show, please do leave a review. And you can find us at iTunes there, and you can leave a review for us. Here is the most recent review from Evolution Med. Thoroughly enjoyable podcast. Lots of insight from this thought-provoking and entertaining crew. And no better example than these two here with me today. Thank you so much, both of you guys. Allie, have fun. Be safe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
See you, Tyler. See you guys.
Yeah.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.